Geely says the following words weird. The following words. Here, I'll say it.
It's confession time.
It is. So the word is boil.
She says bowl.
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 And it's like hung in the back of her throat.
Is that water boiling?
Boiling.
Come on and boil with me.
I say boil.
You probably
hold on,
do.
Hold on.
Boil.
Boil the water.
Boil it. It's in the back of your throat, too. It makes
no,
me want
not.
To clear
it's really
it. Front. A frog.
Boil.
Just boil it.
Just boil it good.
It'll be all right as long as you boil it.
All right, here's another one. You ready?
Yeah.
The word is mirror.
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 Mirror with the big A. Mirror.
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 I don't like.
Hold on, before we leave, I need to go look in the mirror.
I'm gonna go look in the mirror. Yeah, I just say same.
I just say mirror.
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 How many syllables is in the state in which we live?
Mississippi.
But
four.
Do you say that?
Mississippi.
Yeah.
You say Mississippi.
Mississippi.
I think I do.
Mississippi.
No, I live in Mississippi. I say Mississippi.
Yeah. How does she say the word P-I-L-L-O-W?
I think she says that one right.
Pillow.
I say pillow.
Sometimes I'll catch her with the birthday.
What's that? Birthday?
Birthday.
It's weird, bro.
Or the bathroom.
Strawberry.
No, that's not real. She doesn't do
I don't know. Now I'm just making stuff up.
Don't.
Wow, it's beautiful.
Today. On.
You needed the comic relief, didn't you?
Prodigy of Grace.
Yeah, Don was struggling. Can you hear it? Put that down.
Hold on, one more time.
That doesn't belong to you.
Let's do.
We had all things in common.
That's not a good one.
Ooh, please don't. I'm actually worried right now. Please stop. Welcome to Products of Grace, a podcast by Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Don Terrell and Blake McCullough. So, Don, what are we doing today?
So, today we are going to discuss, the title of today's episode is, Don't Put That Evil on Me.
Okay.
Fair enough. But before we begin.
Oh, no.
Do you still need an iPad? So, Lawson.
I'm not doing this.
You're not? You're shirking all of it?
Yeah, 100%.
Are you ashamed?
No.
Why not?
Because we haven't...
sent a messenger to my house.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, I did.
This individual was like, yeah.
He tried to put Drew on me.
Really?
Yeah, 100%.
He's like back door.
Yeah.
It's called lobbying.
He said, Drew, tell Blake to love me.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I said, actually.
He's manipulating us.
I'm not.
He's trying to.
No.
It's not working.
It's manipulation if I hide it. I have no problem.
Most recent elder story was the group chat that we have. And I was like, hey, man, we all each have them over for dinner. Should we use our names? Can we use our names?
No.
No? And Lawson said... You said, yeah, it's happening. Blake said, yeah, it's happening, and gave me the date.
We were already in the...
It was already locked in.
In the works.
Lawson said, we're going to have coffee.
Tomorrow. It was
and
literally
I replied,
the next day.
Hold on. I replied, I really appreciate you, Blake. And Lawson, you text out like, you're so troll. And I just totally ignored you. You were just fuming on the other end, like, how dare you? And then it all came full circle because after coffee, dinner happened.
Yeah.
And I won.
I found out the other day, you made a comment about bivocational ministry.
Yeah.
And I found out another individual had said something about it too, and you thought that he said it to me.
Yes.
And you went into sheer panic.
I did. And I started like confessing the backstory, and then he looked at me and was like, I don't know, dude, it was just totally separate. But then it came out that Blake has a take on Paul's thorn in the flesh.
Oh, gosh.
Get it out there, dude.
What's Paul's thorn in the flesh?
I think his wife left him when he became a Christian.
Lawson, I really appreciate you.
Oh, thanks.
You think that? Like, seriously? Like, I'm just kidding.
It's all conjecture, but I do think silly. That. Yes.
We can cut all this out and just be real serious. Do you just want to be serious and record 45
I think
minutes
that's,
of serious?
I think that's fair, but then we can go into the serious right now. Okay. If you want to do that.
I don't really have an idiom or anything.
Okay.
Do you want one?
No.
Do you miss it?
No.
You miss it.
I don't know. You traditionally don't do well without appropriate liturgy, though.
He's trying to say you're simple-minded.
No, it wasn't. So. He's trying to say that he's consistent.
I mean, there's just a lot. There's a lot to cover.
Well, let's go.
So with that, gentlemen.
Let's do it.
Don't put that evil on me.
Don't put that evil on me. Mm. So Roe v. Wade.
Literally, his notes page is blank.
It is.
It says, don't put that evil on me. There's nothing left.
I have a lot to say. Social media has been full.
It's been a nightmare.
I've seen people and I've heard people say, bro, I just had to delete it. I had to get off of it.
Let's quick summarize really quickly. Just so obviously, we're talking about the Supreme Court decision of Roe v. Wade being overturned. States now possess the rights to...
States deal, and the people and their representatives.
Right. Have the rights again to deal with abortion how they so choose in their state. Obviously, it's a point of great celebration inside of the church, as it should be. However, the added, I think, point needs to be that there are going to be states where abortion is full-blown outlawed, and there are going to be states where abortion is going to be the most accessible it's ever been and without any restrictions whatsoever. I would fully expect that in California, New York, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and various others, Nevada. Anyway, so the other arm is
it's going to get active, as we always see. It's like the Oreo cookies, the Skittles, all of this, right? They use this as... They put dollars towards it. Corporate America put dollars towards it for their employees.
I can't believe
to said
that.
States.
And one of the things that was written was that you cannot ban interstate travel, which is a constitutional right. So a woman can leave the state that she's in and make her way to another state to seek an abortion. Choices. The abortion clinic in clinic was a terrible word. The murder mill in Memphis closed its doors and is moving to Illinois, which is a 3-hour trek. They gave directions.
Wow.
So the appropriate Christian response?
Celebration. Celebration. And I think it's both and, actually, especially if we understand states' rights. I think it's celebration, and it's celebration with an intention of doing all we can to make sure that our state, where we have the most ability, is going to be, going to be faithful, but going to be precise in their prohibition of abortion inside of our state. And then I think there is a sorrow in their very real sense, because you're going to have these states such as, like I just mentioned, that are it's going to be an absolute nightmare. I mean, New Jersey, if I'm not mistaken, Charles, you may remember this, but was completely okay with post-birth abortions. Like, you could literally internally decapitate a human being within like the first 24 hours of the child being born. And so that's going to be running rampant in a number of places. But praise be to God for the number of states that had trigger laws. I mean, I was on Twitter, one of the things that I was watching was certain people saying, okay, it's outlawed in Georgia. It's outlawed. Like, the list just kept going and going and going. And it's also interesting to look at the map and see how many states did immediately begin to ban or put really strong restrictions on access to abortion. So celebration first and foremost, and I think a sobering reality that it's not gone from this country.
Is the abandonment of a child sin?
We distinguish. Nuance.
Yeah, so I was thinking about through like Moses. Like, Moses was abandoned in some sense, but he was actually...
Abandoned for his good.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to think, like, it wasn't abandoned to just life or death.
Yeah.
It seems like... I just wondered, like, I didn't go back and look at this, but it seems like there was a perceived... opportunity for safety.
Yeah.
Towards the daughter, right? Towards Pharaoh's daughter. I don't know. I don't want to read in. I may have a bias here, but that's where I was wondering through. Like, I think like abandonment. I think abandonment, like we have safe harbor laws. This is what was interesting. Like we have safe harbor laws where, you know, orphanages by and large are not a place where you can leave a child, but there are safety places that you can leave.
What's it called? The firehouse is traditionally one of these.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what they're called.
And you won't face
any. And it's
any,
nobody's asking you any questions. They're taking the child and they're going to make sure that they land in a home.
Right.
I forget what they're called though.
Why do you think it bears shame in that?
Bears shame in what?
Like in that abandonment, like of an unwanted child. Like, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily categorize
that as a sinful
thing. Mm-hmm. If the end result is to preserve life.
Yeah.
But it's the, I don't know, is it the shirking of a responsibility? Is that why it's shameful? Is that why? I mean, because you can do it, right? It's like no ask, no tell.
Yeah,
there's
I've
reason
got,
why.
Got,
there's not an investigative
yeah, I've got,
action done on that.
Right. I've got strong opinions on this, but before I go, I was trying to...
I mean, I think if you're blade. Perceiving yeah. shame, maybe it's just like... You think about the motives. I don't know. Like, I guess that's where the nuance comes in, right? If you're thinking about motives, if it's like, I really don't want to raise this child versus I can't. Like, I, you know what I'm saying?
But I've always heard it said, like, it's tongue in cheek, like, you're never financially ready to have children.
Which is...
That's true.
You know?
But I mean, this some people struggle. Are less not ready than others.
This is my struggle, is like, how honest y'all want me to be? How honest...
We can cut it out if it's
how
too
honest. How honest can I be?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, for me, like, for... This may just be a conversation for us, but like, you know, for Julie and I, right?
Yeah.
For life to be conceived in the midst of premarital sex... And to be confronted with that reality, like to have the idea of an abortion at my disposal, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea of adoption, giving up the child was never an idea.
Yeah.
Like to me, the innateness of the natural order
is
pressed
your,
in on me
yeah,
is this is my responsibility,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's to me like to take abortion off the table, then I, you know, to me, like I was just thinking through, like historically, adoption has always been a solution to abandonment. Right?
Adoption has been?
Yeah. Like
okay. Yeah,
you
yeah,
see
yeah.
what I'm saying? Like
yeah,
it,
yeah,
it,
yeah.
it wasn't to I mean, we just live in
it. It's not a solution to abortion. It's a solution to abandonment, is what
right,
you're saying.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, adoption is a solution to a problem that only exists in a sinful world. Right? Okay.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, with the consequences of sin, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't think... Yeah. Sorry.
The reality is that adoption doesn't exist if sin does not, because... There
True.
Would be a proper ordering. Everyone would take responsibility for every action, but it does not mean that every single time that a child is given up, that it's a sinful action.
Yeah, I mean, people die.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's not a result of a sinful action, necessarily.
So I'm saying if the fall didn't happen,
yeah,
then adoption wouldn't be a thing. But
sure.
we live in a world that's affected by sin. Obviously, there's death, there's pain, there's suffering, there's an endless amount of reasons that a child might be given up for adoption. And, you know... Even then, I think there's a difference, especially in our day, with a mother saying, I can't, like, I don't feel like I have the ability to care for this child based upon my socioeconomic situation or my mental situation or, you know, a number of other things, and them saying, but I want the best life possible for my child. Mm. And I think that is, I would not place that in a sinful category. Instead, I would say, man, that's actually uniquely motherly.
Yeah,
it's self.
I was going to use the word noble.
Noble, yeah. I mean, it's saying I want something for my child that I do not have the ability to give, and that being the case, I'm going to give this child up for adoption. And you'd be amazed. Like I guess I have a unique seat to this because I get info summaries of moms, but the one thing I've noticed in almost every single one of them is I want my child to have a dad.
Mm-hmm.
I want my child to have a dad who will love this kid
and be active in their life. And you know what else I read? It's so interesting that they'll have a dad, that they'll have a disciplined home. Like, they know what's good.
Mm-hmm. So do you think abortion is a solution for an inconvenience?
I think abortion is a solution to the sin of sexual morality.
Mm-hmm. And the consequences of...
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's paving, and it's essentially a solution. And this is where, like, it's either... We'll use biblical terms. It's either fornication, right, mm-hmm. where we're having sex outside the confines of marriage, mm-hmm. and the natural thing that occurs when we're having sex is that a child is conceived, and when that happens, our only solution to continue in our sin without repercussions, and it's a mirage because obviously there are repercussions, mm-hmm. but more repercussions is to put the child to death. Mm. For your convenience, and so that you don't have to bear the shame.
Well, on the altar of your idolatry.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the other one is certainly that what we bring up is rape and incest. Mm. Like, those are two that come up. But when you look at the statement of rape and incest, it doesn't change the fact that what you're looking at there, mm-hmm. is a child. And at this point, I mean, you know, obviously we're all under the federal head of Adam, but it doesn't change the fact that this is an image bearer. That this is a child that is innocent in a sense, right? They're not guilty of anything at this point. And so, you know, we give them respect and dignity and honor based upon the fact that they're an image bearer of God.
And I think for me, like, it was the act that brought about disappointment and shame.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Like,
and it's trying to think that we can conceal it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, you absolutely. Can get away with it and continue to be the, I don't know, the like the ultimate decision maker, mm-hmm. of your own life, yeah. right? That,
yeah.
So, you know, I think about for like natural order, like the natural order of just like, you know, what is natural? And I think about like, you know, the opportunity for someone to not have the option to even consider abortion, but be faced with the two choices, right? Could we say that there would be two choices absent abortion, which would be either to be primarily responsible and raise the child?
Yes.
Or to give the child up for adoption.
And either of which are appropriate responses.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, for me, like, I think what it did was allow me the opportunity to look at my actions, repent,
yeah,
and then grab hold of the ordinary natural created order, mm-hmm. and move going forward in that,
yeah,
to be a responsible, God-fearing individual,
yeah.
And to me, like, look what, I mean, to me, that family unit as designed by God,
yeah.
it promotes human flourishing. Yep. It really does.
Crazy,
like, I mean,
how
I mean,
happens.
It's crazy.
It
right?
does promote, like, that's the reason that we have it, is it's built to promote human flourishing in all of its categories. There's a reason that all of these info summaries that come my way say, I just want him to have a dad, mm. right? And if it was the other way around, like where the dad's saying it, I assure you, he'd be saying, I just want the child, mm. to have a mom that will. Mm. And it's because God set this up in such a way as to say that a child should come into a home with a mother and father, and that mother and father should be given to the care, mm. of this child. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible perversion for the mother and father who should be given to the care of the child to essentially sacrifice the child for their convenience, mm. to cover their shame. And, you know, this is where, like, when we think about, you know, you've been really transparent in this, there was, in the midst of that moment, there was a seeing beauty from ashes. Mm-hmm. Like, was there sin? Certainly. But, you know, we look at children in any of these situations, and do we call them a curse?
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't call them a curse. Is there consequence for the sins committed?
Certainly.
Yeah, but why do we assume that the child is the consequence, that it's a perverse response? No. The child is, even in the sin, God blesses.
Mm.
And so I think sometimes our view, and even in the church, and I think we do need to pay attention to the history of this, there are many accounts. I know of situations where pastors in the past have had abortions, like not the pastor, but his wife. And the whole purpose was to conceal or something of that nature, or because they there was some sin present. And it's normally a pastor doing it with his daughter, who perhaps has been immoral. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, what a perverse understanding. Mm-hmm. You don't understand that a lot of times, often, all the time, that what man intends for evil, God intends for good. Mm-hmm. And we never look at a child and call them evil, mm-hmm. but that they're not a blessing mm-hmm. from God. They're not a mm-hmm. curse, right? They mm-hmm. are a blessing.
Because he is the giver of life.
He is the giver of life.
He chose in that moment
yes,
to grant conception.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And bless the world with another image bearer.
So I know of another family, and it's an interesting story. Obviously, I'll conceal identities and be vague. But the what happened was that there was a one night moment, right?
Right.
And 15, maybe 18 months later, there's a single mom mm. with a newborn, mm. and she picks up the phone, calls the individual, and says, I had a baby, and it's yours. Hmm. And fast forward, right? That's a family now.
Hmm.
There's multiple children. You know, and I think for me, a lot of times I think about a lot of the social media, especially the evangelical social media, right? It seems to be like, and I agree, right? Now is our time, right? What is it that the church can do? And I think definitely the church can be about open arms.
Right.
I don't think there's any debate on that. But I don't believe that there's any amount of open armness
that will
solve and satisfy the world's problems, you know? And to me, it's like, I want to press in and say, like, now's the time for people to not have the opportunity for abortion, but to rise to the moment of the occasion mm. and conform themselves to the natural order. Yeah. Like, what? Like, I just not like. Yeah. Is that too much to ask to live in a society where the sanctity of the home is restored? Even from a secular perspective, to see that it's the bedrock of any community.
I mean, I'm here for it.
No, I agree. I'm just saying. I think that. Like we're talking all about symptoms. Like abortion is a symptom of this bigger breakdown, and like everything that we talk about that's a hot button issue, I feel like is just a symptom of this bigger breakdown of the family, where, you know, other things are prioritized and the natural order is just lost.
See, I would actually say I don't disagree with you, but I think it's a symptom that we've seen since Genesis 3 when Adam and Eve covered themselves with fig leaves. The symptom is there's sin and there's shame attached to it, and their response is to cover themselves with fig leaves and pretend like nothing's happened.
That's fair.
When in reality, like, we know that sexual morality happens. And let me just say this full well, just, I mean, to be on record, right? If we have a young lady inside of this congregation who gets pregnant from having sex outside of marriage, like, is there going to be a call for repentance? Absolutely. Absolutely, and unapologetically so. But there will also be a call to that young man to step up. And at the very same time, there will be an aim to care for her and to make sure that she has everything she needs to parent that child. And if she has a desire to give that child up for adoption, then so be it. But we can never be a people where we look at, again, going back to that child's not a curse. Mm. That child's not a curse. That child's a blessing. And we're going to do everything we can as a church to care for her and the child that's been conceived.
So you know what my Christian high school did with the girls that got pregnant?
Yep, send them away.
Yep.
That was normative.
I think when you elevate this image. Idea that you cannot repent and bear fruit,
agree.
Keeping with repentance,
agree.
That it's a suicidal moment.
Yeah, it is.
I equate it with suicide, bro. Yeah. Like, it is, I mean, it's truly taking the innocent and murdering them to not deal with the consequences. And I think a lot of times, like, social pressures, even community social pressures, is what presses in on that person, where they don't believe that the life is actually innocent and will be celebrated, right, and yeah, they'll be provided an opportunity, yeah, to be made whole.
Because, right, here's the deal. That child's born inside of this congregation. Let me tell you how that plays out. It plays out like every other child that's born inside this congregation. Like Sunday morning, I'm sitting here preaching, and there are three babies in the congregation, and none of those babies are being held by their mothers. Mm. Right? They're all being held by different members of the church loving those children. And that's what we, you know, looking at this from an appropriate biblical worldview, we look at every human being as an image bearer of God, and we treat them accordingly. Mm. Like, we don't look at them as something lesser. And, you know, what we really have to do is be faithful in that, of saying, you know what, we are going to love these children. But I think, let me just say this inside of this congregation, I think that's natural response. Mm. I don't think anybody's having to have corrective thoughts as the child is born here. Mm-mm. I think the natural love that takes place inside the household of faith sees a mother and cares for her despite the grounds of the conception of the child. Mm-hmm.
I felt as if the church looked at me and said, your life was ruined. You threw it all away.
Hmm. And what a foolish, was that? So can I ask a question though, really personal? Do you think that was true? Do you think that was actually the perception?
I think I struggled with that early on. I felt like that the enemy had won and that all was lost.
Oh.
And in fact, it was the disciplinary hand of the Lord to bring me into obedience as a wandering believer.
Yeah.
Mm. True facts. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, was life hard? You know, I mean, definitely life was hard, right? Yeah. I mean, there were things in which, you know, came prematurely. And what comes with premature events is normally immaturity,
right.
You know, and you struggle through it. But I mean, Julie and I look at a lot of people around the congregation, you know, like you and Sarah, a couple of them, you know, it's like, I would never have been able to do that with my kids, right? Because that was the environment of being premature and not ready, not kids per se, but just, you know, you're thrust into... Not as someone who has experienced outside consequences from a third party. They're your own consequences. Yeah. And I think a lot of that was, you know, there's just a lot of it that you're not ready. Like you don't have your faculties. But I would never go back and go, it wasn't a blessing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I would just want to hit delete on all that. But it's like, you know, to me, you're able to turn the page. I think that's the opportunity for the church.
Yeah.
Mm. Is to be there as a
lean in and help.
Yeah. Yeah, and help. I mean, in our own, you know, in our own communities. Because our own communities are rife with all sorts of sin and problems and brokenness, you know?
Like, yeah.
So there's a guy that posted on Twitter. He said, don't let them too cocue you. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's what we're going to go with. I think it's Latin for like an illogical dissonance. Yeah, see if that's saying that right.
I think it's too quo quo.
Yeah, too quo quo. Read all that. You read it.
Don't let them too quo quo you. While pro-lifers obviously care about mothers and born children, it is irrelevant to the issue. We could be the biggest hypocrites in the world, and that still wouldn't change the fact that it's wrong to take the life of an innocent human being.
Can confirm.
Can confirm, you said?
Can confirm.
Yeah, I like that.
Can confirm.
I think that's like the biggest, well, not the biggest, but it's one of the biggest problems I've had with the discourse, and you can't even really call it discourse, but like since the ruling came down, it's like...
The bullhorns.
Yeah, because it's like... Well, if you guys don't want them murdered, you better take care of them, or you better vote.
Hey, you know what I'm doing?
They would have.
You know what I'm doing, Blake?
What?
I'm being a dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm over here in the natural order of things.
Yeah, I agree.
No, that's our opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you looking at?
A text message from our producer.
Oh, sweet.
I'm gonna read it, and I think maybe we've kind of hit on this, but I want to clarify because I think it's an interesting question. He asks, why do people feel more shame from getting pregnant than from the fornication that produced the baby? I actually don't think it's more shame from being pregnant. I think it is evidence of the shame of the fornication. It's like, I can't pretend like it didn't happen now.
It's bringing out of the dark into the light.
Yeah. And I may be wrong, but that's genuinely how I feel about it. I think there's obvious ramifications of you know, this happening, and as they go forth and commit sexual immorality, I think there's a clear evidence. No one gets to look at this situation and say, oh, this didn't happen, right? That it's like, it's on display, it's clear. And so that's why I think that comes about. And I think the other part of that is, it is true, I think men do get to dodge some of that shame. But
it's ongoing shame. If you dodge that, It's ongoing shame.
Oh, because you're not stepping up.
That's
and being,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
It's like totally an opportunity to be
yeah.
a man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and take responsibility.
Absolutely.
It's not about righting wrongs.
Yeah.
It's just about going forward.
Yeah. But I want to go back to that. I want to go back to that question, though.
All right. Can I read? This will go in hand.
Okay, yeah,
I
sure.
just don't want to put it on the back yeah. end. No other solution should supersede their responsibility. Thanksgiving should be given for the alternatives which are available, which provide safe harbor in life. If there isn't available adoptive parent or parents, nor a willing social society or the lack thereof, it never justifies murder, obviously. But it's an old and tired complaint that you truly don't care about life if you aren't ready and willing to adopt. Remember, first order responsibility is God's design. The church is the buttress of truth, and the family being healthy and intact is a blessing which safeguards life. Society shouldn't shirk its responsibility, and our, air quotes, our work is just beginning. What if I never do anything other than stand for truth? Because I don't adopt doesn't mean I'm a part of the problem or absent the social solution. Pick that apart.
Okay, so first,
I think that ties in with the other tweet. Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just we're going to come back to it, but I want to say this first. But there is never a moment where looking at like playing the lesser evil game is kind of Satan's game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's not God's game. It's evil. Lesser, more, don't care.
Right. It's not like, Christian. The Bible calls us to discern between good and evil.
Yeah. Not
degrees of evil.
Right. And so like there's always this question, right? And I think this kind of goes hand in hand. There's this question of like, okay, well, what do you do if a gun's pointed to your wife's head and they ask you to deny the Lord?
And it's like
you don't deny the Lord. It's like you're in a terrible situation with a terrible outcome, but the choice between sin and sin is don't. And so in the same situation, like saying that, oh, well, the child's going to be impoverished, the child's going to go through, or my goodness, another one that comes up regularly, well, the child's going to have Down syndrome. Let me go ahead and tell you, if you are looking at a child with Down syndrome and you're saying, yeah, that child shouldn't be here.
That's so utilitarian.
It's so utilitarian. And you also, why do you hate joy?
Right. Mm.
Like, that's really how I feel about it. Like, why do you hate joy? And so when I look at those types of arguments, it's just like, look, you don't actually, like, please stop pretending like you care about this situation because you would look at them outside the womb and put them to death later on.
Mm.
Because when we see life, we value life, and we value it in the womb, and we value it until the natural tomb, for lack of better terms.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to be willing to do is to look at people when they give you those stupid arguments and say, I don't care.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think at a certain point we have to say, I don't care. We will care for those children. Your argument, though, is not made in good faith.
Mm.
It's not as though you actually care. You can't tell me you care about the life of a child when you're about to kill it in the womb.
Mm.
You don't get to make that argument. And so...
Yeah, you didn't vote in the election. We don't care what you have to say.
I mean,
there's all sorts of things, right?
Yeah, it's like across the board. Yeah,
across the board.
I mean, you had an opportunity. And here, like, as you're making these arguments, you can't stand on the top of virtue and pretend as though it's virtuous to kill an impoverished child in the womb. And you don't know their fate, on the other hand.
I don't think we as a society even understand, absent the millions and millions of lives in our current present reality,
yes,
what our society has deprived ourselves of.
I couldn't agree more.
It's true.
Like we will never.
We
know.
Act like there's been no,
but there has
effect.
Been. There has been.
There has been. Yeah. You can't measure it, but you know it's there. It's like
I mean, I think about it for my own count for our own county here.
Mm.
You're talking about millions and millions. I think it's 60 million or 61 million. I think children have been aborted, and I think about DeSoto County in general. DeSoto County has 186,000 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not many.
Mm-hmm.
And when you compare it to that number, mm-hmm. you think about just this town would be filled. And yet some of the arguments that might be made there is like, population control, give me a break. Like we've been playing the population control game for years and years and years. And amazingly, humans are able to, by God's grace, provide for the needs of humanity.
Well, those concerned with population control are losing their populations,
like
in other countries.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I never look at a beautiful field of flowers and want less.
It's true.
I love that.
Yeah, let's mow down half of that because that'll make it better.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we're living absent God's beauty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Even, I mean, obviously.
We live in a ramification that we don't even perceive.
That's right. Yeah. The effects of sin that you don't even realize you're living in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, goodness.
All right, so I guess I struggle with the now is our time really to really show, and this is levied at the church.
This is what I want to speak to. All right, so I'm having dinner or lunch, yesterday, and the comment was made, a brilliant comment, which is, how about the church stops doing what it's doing right now, and then you'll see how much it's done? Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, like, hearing those comments in particular hits me somewhat sideways, because I've been in the process of adoption for almost a year now, and my book's only been shown twice because there's such a long line of people willing to adopt.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really difficult for me to hear that comment and say, oh yes, clearly the need is so great and there are so few people. If their arguments landed even slightly, the time it takes to adopt would be 2 months or less.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they're not. They're 3 years. And don't even get me started in regard to those who have special needs. Down syndrome waiting list is longer for a child without.
Mm.
And so it's like you look at this data, and sure, this is anecdotal data. But this is one adoption agency that primarily works in the Southeast, and there's an endless waiting list. You talk to any parent who is aiming for adoption, and they're waiting years.
Mm.
And so don't tell me that there's not people stepping up when we're not even at the front of the line, and we've been here a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when people make those comments, and you know, somebody made a comment on Beth's Facebook post about it.
I heard.
Yeah.
I heard it got spicy.
It did. And praise be to God.
Julie complimented you that you laid low on it.
I did.
Well done.
Another young man handled it faithfully. And so in the midst of it, it's like, you can bring all these charges you want to. And my favorite one is like, well, why don't you adopt? And I'm like, hello, like, pay attention. And then
some of these arguments like don't even deserve engagement.
No, you know, because it's like no. You can't say, oh, you don't want kids to be murdered. Well, you better adopt them. Like, I just don't understand how that follows.
That's why I go back to the earlier in the podcast. Like, I don't understand like why we fall into that trap that like adoption is the solution to abortion, when I believe like. It seems to me there's a natural thing that's an innate given to the parents to say,
yeah,
I don't want to give this up.
Yeah, yeah. I have a responsibility.
Yeah. Like, the harder thing to do in my mind is to actually hand it over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that to me is like, yeah. I don't know. I think I want more people to be faced head on with the design of the Creator and be faced with their actions and to be responsible for them. Like, that's who's got the opportunity to rise
from ashes in time. Yeah,
and to flourish under it and go, you know what? It's what I want my kids to experience. Yeah. And I want their kids to experience is just this order, this family unit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because there is that primary responsibility, and we should be driving people to it. Like, part of gospel transformation is, over time, the reestablishment and preaching the order that God created and expecting people to walk in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why if something like that happened in this congregation, the very first statement there is not, you should give the child up for adoption. The very first statement is, how can we help you parent your child,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I say that as someone who benefits from adoption, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend as if I don't. We do it because we believe that God's called us to it, but we also, this is the way that God has given us to bring children into our home.
Mm-hmm.
And we have we rejoice in that.
Mm-hmm.
But like we had an info summary recently with a woman who was going to give her child up for adoption, and I got an email today that she had decided to parent the child. And you know what my response was? Sincerely, my response was, well, praise God.
Yeah.
Praise God that she said, you know what? I'm going to make this work, and I'm going to parent this child that is mine.
Mm.
And that should be our immediate response. We should be rejoicing when parents say, yes, this is my child. I will step up to the responsibility. And yes, to hear the shouts of the world around us, yes, the church should be quick to encourage and bolster her and him to walk faithfully in that.
Yeah, I don't want to pit like primary means
against secondary
and adoption and say like it's one of the, because I do think it's both. Like, obviously it's not one or the other, but the church, here's kind of what I was thinking through. The church cannot solve the world's hatred for children and the consequences of their actions through any of our humanitarian efforts, including adoption or fostering. We will lose every time.
It'll never be enough.
Oh, it will never be enough.
Yeah, it's never enough.
It'll never be enough.
And that, to me, is like, but that's the charge right now.
Yeah.
Because if you mean it,
yeah,
then they're all coming to your house.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to the church, universal. Like, that's where we got to shift them
but
all.
But you hear the hatred in that voice. Like, like what you're saying. It's like, you're saying this, but what you're actually saying is you hate children.
That's right.
Like, let's not pretend like that's like, not what you're saying.
Abandon them all.
Yeah.
Well, it also comes with the assumption that the church is, like, white and upper middle class.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, to think that, like, that's the caricature that's drawn. It's like, the church is white and upper middle class, and they're the, you know, like that kind of, like, you guys are the ones against abortion, and so you need to, like, quit being
racist
and all this, and like, and selfish, and adopt some babies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's just a
because it's like, if you didn't vote in the election, you don't get a say in it, and if you're not adopting, you don't get a say in it.
Right.
It's like, that's just not true.
Yeah, I don't have to have the standpoint of someone who has adopted to tell you that murder's wrong. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, and I think that's like, that's the crux of it, right? Like, there's like a, you said something about in that other statement about something about like beholding truth or being a buttress for truth or something like that.
Like, what if I don't do anything else other than stand for truth?
And I think that's what it comes down to, right? Like, there is, because there is no absolute truth
right
in people's minds, then they can, in their own logic, come up with reasons why, you know, we're wrong and they're right. But like, to be able to make an argument about abortion that's like, well, if you don't want to get an abortion, don't get an abortion. Like, let people, you know what I mean? Like, that. I read that argument this week was like, well, if you don't want to get an abortion, don't get an abortion. And if you don't want your child to get an abortion, then don't let your child get an abortion. And it's like, if you replace that with anything else, like, if you don't want to murder someone, well, just don't murder someone. Don't, you know, don't control.
But don't bother me while I'm doing it.
Don't control whether someone else can murder someone. It's just like, it's a collapse of truth.
Mm.
And then. You have nothing if you don't have truth.
And the only answer back to this is, right, is, and I've seen this in videos of, like, the protest and things like that. Well, it's not a child. Look, based upon, like, we say this often, that life begins at conception. Right. I will never make an apology for that.
It's but
based upon scientific advancement, like, just based upon scientific advancement and what we can see happening inside of the womb today, like, it's just been disproven, that concept that it's not a human being up until a certain point of development or the location. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the two arguments. Well, it's development up until this point, or it's the location. If they're outside the womb, so it's like the 6 inches from inside the womb to outside the womb that makes the child a human being. And we know these arguments are fallacious. Mm-hmm. They are not honest arguments. They bear no real evidence or weight. All they are a banner that people have blindly accepted for decades because they don't want the inconvenience of a child. So the deep level of this is, unbelievers hate the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest way to demonstrate your hatred of God, and this is not new, let's not pretend that abortion is new. Perhaps the ways in which we have done it over the years is new, but people have been sacrificing infants to a false God since very early on in human history. Mm. There's a reason that we say things like Moloch's still alive.
Mm.
And it's because people were sacrificing their children to Moloch to please this false God. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's a war against the image of God. And it is a spiritual warfare against the image of God. We've seen Satan do it a number of ways through human history. And we've just civilized it. Like, it's so clean. It's so clean. It prevents shame. You never have to see the ramifications of it. And, you know, if we pay close attention, what you're seeing is actually just a war against the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a surprise.
Mm.
And it's just the easiest and most vulnerable that take the blow.
Mm. It reminds me, Blake, what you were saying, and on the heels of what you said, Lawson, like what they said to Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yep.
Who made you the judge? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if you look at Lot, he was... I mean, the New Testament calls him righteous because he was robed in the righteousness of Christ. He wasn't hitting 100, whatever it is. You know, but he still stood for the truth, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the midst of all of that, like, he stood for the objective truth.
Yeah.
And I think, like, now that's the opportunity for all of us to elevate our voice on behalf of objective truth, right? Like, this is God's design, and I welcome, like, it's almost like the society at large, like, from the bullhorns, are like, you're not ready for the world that's going to be on the other side of this.
Try me.
I want it. I want an opportunity for more of the formation of the nuclear family.
Yep.
Right? For life to flourish. I mean, that to me, like, that's the true opportunity. Like, that's the truly exciting thing. And I mean, you know, there's obviously more, you know, legal work to do at the state and local level.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all done. And obviously, you know, the heart of the problem is the heart of man. And we know that the gospel of Jesus Christ only accomplishes true change and lasting change. But I think, like, you know, what is it in Timothy? Like, pray for your leaders so that we can live peaceable and quiet lives. And it's like, you know, I'm thinking through like Romans 13, right? And the civil magistrate's responsibility to be the enforcer of justice.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to face
consequence.
Their consequences.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's and let's be clear, that's not us saying that as those who have not faced consequences, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying it like I want people to face their consequences and I don't want to bear mine. It's saying that there are consequences for actions. And so, like,
yeah, the best thing that could have ever happened to me were the consequences to my actions.
Mm. And God used them.
Yes, bro. Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
All right. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I want to hit an argument that I hear regularly.
Okay.
So this is the argument. So quote this. This is not Lawson saying this. This is a quote. I think that abortion is bad, but I don't think that we should outlaw it. They make a distinction between morality and then, I'm going to think, let me be more precise. Sorry. I feel like I'm not being clear.
Are you like trying to explain like a libertarian position?
Perhaps, but it's like, I don't, so I think abortion's sinful. I think no one should have an abortion, but I don't think the government has the right to bar it, to prevent it from taking place.
Yeah, I struggle with that. I struggle with that because of Romans 13.
Okay.
You know, like, I think the civil magistrate is the enforcer, is the minister of God to carry out justice, and we shouldn't be afraid of those civil magistrates if we do good.
Right.
And so I think, like, the measure of good is only God himself, and he has given us his objective law.
Right.
And we know that it is not the command is do not murder.
Right.
I mean, that's just it.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't we don't, you know, to me, like, does a magistrate or a ministry of law enforcement or however you want to say it, like, I think there's a responsibility of the society to uphold the law, like, in the law to be objective, because if it's just every man did what is right in his own eyes,
then,
like,
we're in judges.
Yeah, and it's like, you don't want anarchy, like, because that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, you know, we've somewhat bought that lie,
mm-hmm.
that it's like, as long as you're doing it in your house, then it's okay.
Yeah, but you're damaging the entire society when you're
so
murdering
Owen
a child.
Strahan posted on Twitter. Strahan. Owen Strachan. Owen Strachan posted on Twitter.
Owen Scratchy.
Oberfell is next.
Obergefell
is next.
Let's wrap this up before we move forward.
No, I'm just saying, that's, to me, like, that's the enforcement of civil magistrates upon the society, that there's a God-given created order, and he commands his image bearers, even though they be lost and apart from him, to be fruitful and multiply, one man, one woman, and go and bear children, and do this as my image bearers.
Yes.
Okay.
So, hold on. I want to say that the civil magistrate must outlaw and abolish abortion for it to be conducting itself appropriately.
Yeah.
The same way that we would say that the civil magistrate must punish anyone who commits murder.
Yes.
Like, we're not negotiating murder.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But when we hit abortion,
it's not okay to murder in your own house.
That's
either.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't, like if you kill your brother in your house, you're still going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so.
And if you kill a child in the womb, you have committed murder, and there's ramifications for that, right? And so what we have to be willing to say, I think this is where I see this a lot. I see this phrase, well, I don't think that abortions, I would never have an abortion, but I think the government shouldn't be touching it. I can apply that to any great trespass then at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to come to your house and steal all your stuff. But the government really shouldn't be mandated, so it's not really a big deal anyway. Like, you're not going to call the police on me because I did that, right? And it's like,
this, I've heard you always say, like, okay, if you believe that, then give me your wallet.
Give me your wallet.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I stole that from R.C. Sproul. But it's just like, at this point, we're saying that there shouldn't be ramifications for sin. And the civil magistrate, as you've made reference to in Romans 13, is there to wield the sword. And let's pay close attention to what that means. Wield the sword means that they are there to enact vengeance. That comes on the heel of Romans 12 that says, you don't seek vengeance yourself. Then he says, here's my ministers who will seek vengeance. And so what we have to be willing to say is that there is a very real sense in which the civil magistrate is held accountable to execute justice in the world. When we look at the child in
even
the
womb, the justice is perverted.
Yeah, yeah. And so in this, even if we're looking at this and we're saying, okay, there's a child in the womb, the government staying its sword is perverse. The government not executing justice at the death of an infant, at those who are most vulnerable, is a wicked civil magistrate.
Yeah, or providing the necessary protection to protect
absolutely
those who are innocent and without help.
Absolutely.
You know, here's my take.
So the Christian doesn't get to separate these two, is what I'm saying.
Sir, are we always living in someone's theonomy?
No, you can't say theonomy.
I mean, you see what I'm saying? Because it's like, it's either going to be a perversion of justice.
Right.
I mean, did you read about, like, the U.S. Embassy in Kuwait? Like, they rose the flag, and you're living in, obviously, a Muslim...
They raised what? The LBGD flag, yeah.
And there was some back and forth. Yeah. If you want to hear about it, Al Mohler did a great podcast on it.
Mm.
But it's like, that's the thing, right? You're exporting a moral standard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
And saying, like, well, you know, because people always get up in arms. They're like, well, I mean, you know, you can't enforce your beliefs on someone else. But that's what everyone's doing. That's the
that's
world.
That's not real. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not real. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
and it doesn't matter if it's your religious belief, like if it's objectively right.
Yeah. And this is where,
true.
True. You know? Charles, I'm hitting
you with again,
it.
That's where, like, truth matters.
This is where the distinction between civil, ceremonial, and moral is so important.
It really is.
Because the moral law of God is not to be, it's you don't throw it out,
yeah,
right?
You
look at civil and ceremonial, and there are clear precedents for
a particular
people at a particular time.
It's not a tripartite division of the law. It's just God's law
that has existed with
himself because it...
Show me a civil magistrate that doesn't enforce the Ten Commandments, and I'll show you a perverse civil magistrate.
Yes.
And we nuance it, right? Like, oh, well, maybe that's not murder. Yes, yeah, it is. And so we're to enforce it. As a matter of fact, in Romans 13, which you'll find immediately following Romans 13, where it talks about the civil magistrate, is a statement of many of the Ten Commandments. And so I think we see that quite clearly. If we understand that, we understand that all of those things are meant to be enforced inside of a society. That being the case, then we look at all of these various types of sins, and we say the civil magistrate does have an important role to play in their enforcement.
Yeesh.
And so that's where I am on it.
You want me to read this? Or you go ahead. May
we
rightly assume giving a child up for adoption is a difficult and an emotional one? Question mark.
Yes.
I wonder how many change their mind and raise their children or child.
Two.
Question mark.
Two in my experience so far.
Okay.
In 3 months.
I want more nuclear families obedient in their submission to the Creator. Why? Because He commands it. How do we as a society restore the sanctity of the nuclear family? An environment absent abortion is a wonderful start.
Yes.
Carry on.
Whatever, you just listed like 36 questions and didn't let us talk to any of them.
Well, let's back them up and talk.
We'll back it up.
Why do you think? Why do you think it is a difficult and emotional one?
Because there is a natural tie there.
Yeah, there really is.
And we should never pretend it isn't. That's why, like yesterday I tweeted that adoption isn't trauma. Adoption isn't trauma.
Right.
Giving a child up for adoption is traumatic, right? But the reality is that adoption is a response to a very difficult situation, and adoption is innately good.
Well, and I think that's why we don't come with the attitude of being like, well, just adopt them. You know, like we're not yelling that at anyone.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I think it's important what we already said about, like, as the church, like, we can gather around you as a parent to this child and love you and help you and, you know, babysit for you and, like, all of those things. And, like, I think that's the, I guess it's a straw man, but it's just like
Like, we're just that Christians are just out here yelling, well, just put them up for adoption. It's like, we're not even saying that's mm-hmm. necessarily the best case for you, you know?
Because mm-hmm. best case scenario is that mom says, I have a natural tie and mm-hmm. I want to live by this. Mm-hmm. And I can, because I do have a support system around me to care for me.
Best case is dad says that.
Can confirm.
But you know what's interesting is, even with like that innate God-given responsibility of parent to child, how often even does that adoptive child, after being adopted, maybe later adult years, I have two friends that just, they were adopted and they wanted to know, right, who their birth parents were.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's
a draw.
It is a draw. And I think if you move past that, that primary means of what God gave to humanity as a bedrock of society. Yeah. If you move back to me, like, you're giving into the argument.
Yeah.
Like, you're giving into the argument. The argument is like, no, be responsible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, raise the child.
Yeah.
So and my next question
that,
was,
in that God provided a means to recover essentially from the breaking of those ties in adoption. It's his response to the sin that has been committed, or the willingness to offer up a child for adoption.
So I said, I want more nuclear families obedient in their submission to the Creator. Why? And I said, he commands it. Is that sufficient?
It's the best situation.
Yeah.
It's for flourishing.
He commands it is sufficient. That's the fruit of it.
Right.
But what's the other fruit? Because I think it solves.
I
think it solves? I think it solves educational issues.
Facts.
I think it solves crime.
Facts.
Solves crime.
It helps prevent
it, yes.
Socioeconomic
issues. I don't want to get into this situation where we're saying if everyone lived in a nuclear family, we'd live in the perfect world.
No.
Because, like, that's what I'm saying.
So if commands it isn't enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sometimes in the argument, it's like, well, look at the beauty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, golly, why would I go get married?
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's like if commands isn't enough, and I'm one of those people, like, you know, I always joke, like, I could never understand algebra because I never had a life application to use it. And all the algebra teachers are like gasping because there's plenty of real life issues. I still don't know where to use it. Yeah, so to me, it's like, I think that's what maybe can help people say beyond just, well, he commands it, so now go and be fruitful and multiply, one man, one woman.
Yeah.
I'm just searching for reasons why it helps with crime, education.
It helps with every sphere of
emotional
life.
Emotional fortitude.
Yeah, and these are assuming that you're
faithfully abiding by the roles that God's given for the marriage.
Of course.
Yes, absolutely. That you're conducting yourself in a God-honoring way.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it touches everything. And I think this is really helpful, actually, because I do think that cry of, well, then you need to adopt them, is a cry that I think many Christians hear, and they're like, they say yes to that, but it's like, I feel like there's something missing there. They may not instantly grab but we should also encourage people to be faithful and to raise the children that God's blessed them with, regardless of the way in which they were conceived. Mm. And so, you know, I think this is a missing puzzle piece in this argument, is what I'm saying. It's, you don't hear this, be responsible, raise the children that you've conceived.
Mm-hmm. But people have gone a step further recently that I've seen in their arguments, because it's like, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen that tweet that was like a huge L that this lady took, because she was like, Christians don't do anything or it was like, if you're a Christian, tell me underneath this tweet what you've done for a child who is going to be aborted or for an adoptive mother. And there's just like thousands of replies. Like, she got ratioed really bad. But now people are moving toward like adoption, that kind of adoption as trauma idea that you're talking about, Lawson. It's like, well, like, who's to say that these kids want to be adopted by a Christian family? Like, Christianity is, you know, whatever you want to put in there. Like, Christian families will cause more trauma than abortion, which doesn't make any sense.
But
that's where the argument's head.
That's why it goes from, when you say yes, it's like, yeah, but
right,
you'll destroy their lives doing, you know, teaching them to, you know, submit to God's law, follow right. Jesus, right. all of those things.
All right, so what do you think about, so there's a professor and a social commentator that came out and said, I lament with those who are essentially in pain at the loss of what they perceive to be a basic human right.
It wasn't a basic human right, and you shouldn't limit
it. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but I think I summed that up kind of close.
So I had to read that quote four times. I'll say your name, Karen Swallow Pryor. I have no problem doing it. Sorry, I'm done. I'm done with this. This woman comes out and says...
This woman.
I'm sorry. I'm done. I'm done with her. That statement in the midst of that, I read it three or four times.
Karen,
the first
you
time,
are not invited so the to Lawson's
time,
birthday party.
So the first time, so the first time I read it, the first time I read it, I was like, wait, because it's,
you were like, wait.
Yeah. So I go back and I go back and read it again. And the statement of, I lament, y'all, I'm sorry. We do not lament justice.
Yeah.
We don't lament justice. Yeah. I'm so sick of hearing people say, I'm really upset that justice has been done. Christians don't do this.
Right.
Like, I don't understand how we've gotten here. We lament the perversion. We lament all types of things. We lament sin. We do not lament when our civil magistrate says...
We lament them and pity them. You know what I'm saying?
Right now, I mean, the idea that... Oh, my gosh. The idea that a woman walks into...
We need the organ.
The idea that a woman walks in and has a conversation with Karen Swallow, whatever her name is, Pryor, and her immediate response to... I can't get an, like a woman saying, I can't get an abortion anymore, is not praise God.
Mm.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, she, look, weep with those who weep has a limit.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't weep when God rejoices. Mm. Like, we just don't do that. Mm. And I see this over and over and over again. And if you replace this, if you take that comment from Karen Swallow Pryor and you place it inside of slavery,
mm-hmm.
Do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wept, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Weren't they sad? Weren't they dismayed that their livelihood was being destroyed for the freedom, people's rightful freedoms inside of the world? You're right. You'd sit down with them and you'd be like, tragic. Shut your mouth. That is foolishness and heinous.
Yeah,
we rejoice.
I think it falls in line with judgment begins with the house of God, and that fails. You know what I'm saying? Like, there should be a response. We've covered a lot of appropriate responses, and to me, I agree with you very much, so inappropriate. Hmm. And we can judge. Like, we're called to judge.
Oh.
Yeah, like that's...
Marked and avoided.
Yeah, if it begins at the house of the Lord, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think that definitely...
And here's the deal. So let's add to this. There are people that are learning, right? I'm not going to pretend like there are not people inside of congregations that have been misled, that have misunderstood, that have bought the lies that the world sells them, and they're learning amidst this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll be gracious there. You reach a point where this is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
When you've written a couple books and you're teaching at a Southern Baptist seminary, you're far past that line.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, the reason that we have people in pews that are saying things that they're saying is because they're listening to Karen Swallow Pryor and frankly, Beth Moore and various others like, what's his name? The other Moore.
Russell
Moore.
It's like they want to keep a phone line open with the world.
I don't care.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it is. Like, hey, yeah, I'm still on speed dial. You know where to get me.
Yeah.
I'm here for you. And it's like, bro, cut the cord.
Okay, so let's talk about winsomeness really quickly. I've had three or four conversations about winsomeness recently. I am thrilled to sit down with someone and talk with them in a kind, gentle, and understanding way, like the scriptures tell us to, that I should be ready to give an answer for the hope with gentleness and respect. Right. So if I'm sitting down with somebody, my aim is to communicate with them in such a way that I can actually continue that communication, that I can care for them, that I can call them to repentance, and I can do so with gentleness and respect. Winsomeness is not friendliness with the world.
Mm.
It's just not.
Yeah.
Like, what does 1 John say? Friendship with the world is enmity with God.
Yeah.
Like, and to hear this come out of the mouths of people that are highly respected inside of evangelicalism is beyond me.
Yeah, what sort of people should we be if all of this around us is to be judged by fire? You know what I'm saying? Like, definitely give an account for that one.
Sorry, I can't do that. Like, I just can't anymore. That, because the next one, let's say a Burgerfeld comes, will be, it's tragic that so many people's, and they'll use the word, It's tragic that so many people's marriages have just been disbanded. They were never married.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a flickering light?
What do you mean?
Like, sometimes I think, like, when you look back over the, and this is not our bag.
My heart rates up now.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, none of us are political experts. I don't have a history degree. But if you look back over the Supreme Court and how the justices got placed, you know, it seems like if the electorate base doesn't want this, then it won't last because... Yeah. It, you know what I'm saying? Like, you look at what it took to get the simple majority to flip it, to push it back to the state. And I just wondered, like, is it a flickering light of, like, you know what I'm saying, of just days gone by that we just have, like, this momentary last flicker of light. Like, you get this sweet taste of God's mercy before utter darkness. You know what I'm saying?
So you're, like, not post-mill?
No.
I don't know. Like, I wonder... how much of the world, like, obviously we hear how much of the country we hear loud voices, right? Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much of the country is actually, like, in their heart of hearts against abortion, right? Like, because I think, like, I would say Democrats have had the chance to mm-hmm. make it law,
and they haven't been able to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you have the chance to make it law, so and you didn't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, like, why leave it up to the Supreme Court?
Mm-hmm. It's a speculative question. And I mean, what is that thing that we say? Like, people are not, totally depraved. I'll use your word. In actuality, it's in principle alone.
It means that people are not as evil as they could be.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like there's that innate God-givenness into all humans that they have the law of God written on their hearts. Yeah, they know right from wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, there are non-Christians who are against abortion.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah. I think so this is me being optimistic, which I'm prone to, but...
Are you post-mill?
No, I want to be. I want to be post-mill so bad.
I was reading this article by John MacArthur, and I was like, I didn't realize, like, he had me. It was all about abortion. It was like reading it. It was something he wrote, like, in maybe 2017. Yeah, yeah. He got, like, down.
And during
and
the Great,
like,
Tribulation.
Yes, in the millennial reign. I'm like...
Bro, we in it, bro. Next. We in it.
Yeah.
Who are you? GTY.org. Get out of here, John.
Go home.
Did you say go home?
Yeah.
You're silly. We appreciate John MacArthur.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I love the article right up into there.
And I was like, all right, next. Yeah. So.
Is that meme where you put it in reverse?
Back up,
like,
to
like the, ba- the baby who turns around, come around the corner.
Sorry. This is Protestant grace.
So this generation is supposedly the most pro-life generation that there has been since before Roe v. Wade.
I can't even believe we measure that.
But let's remember, there are people that are very loud.
No, that's what I was saying earlier. Yeah. Yeah. Like, loud doesn't mean numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Just means loud.
And I think the funny thing about fear of man is you very rarely appeal to the masses. You always appeal to the loud.
And Mueller always deals with this, too. Like, people say they vote certain ways and never... They don't actually obviously vote that way that they say, and it's all a matter of, like, publicly not wanting to be unpopular, but, like, truly deep down not believing the things that they say they believe.
So my hope is no. My hope is it's not a flash in the pan. My hope is that the states, like, and I'll say this, one of the things that I'm glad about is, you know, I feel like that the church in Mississippi has a war to fight. Like, at the federal level, we're obviously here because there were people who were waging war on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the states having the authority again gives more ability for the churches in those states to fight and to do. Because, I mean, you had to get something to the Supreme Court. You don't have to get something to the Supreme Court anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to get it to the Supreme Court of the state, perhaps. But, you know, the reality is that the states, I mean, I think of even like California. In those states, you can have people fighting in those states, and they'll have a unique ability that they did not have before. Mm. Even in the seeming insurmountable tide of liberalism in California, I also think that a ramification that's going to come is blue states are going to get real, real blue and red states are going to get real, real red. Mm-hmm. Because I think you're going to have people move based upon these things.
But in the end, like, you know, this world is passing away.
Yeah.
The church is, quote unquote, on a pilgrimage. This is not our home.
Right.
And I think the hope is that we have a future hope, right?
In
the glory of the resurrection, and that we long for a kingdom, right, that the sun never sets and there is no sin and there is no suffering.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately, like, right, we said this at least the past couple times, like, to have eternity stamped on our eyes and to have a viewpoint that we can't get caught up in, you know, saying, like, momentary hand-to-hand combat, because I think, like, ultimately there are things that people do that are great things in their lives politically, you know, for the cause, right? But I think, like, the normal everyday life of the believer is to just be ordinarily obedient, mm-hmm. right? And, like, that's what God instituted to change the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ordinary everyday faithfulness in your local body.
Yep.
And I think that brings great comfort to me, right? That I don't have to be a giant slayer, quote-unquote.
Or a legal expert.
That's right. Yeah.
The one thing that I would say with the church in particular on that, you know, we look at this, we count our win. Like, I'm not afraid to call this a win. I think it's a win, right? The what we must continue to do in the midst of this is I'm all about, like, let's have social reforms, but let's not forget where social reforms begin.
Mm-hmm.
They don't begin with the intention of bringing social reform. Like, they begin with looking at souls mm-hmm. and saying they must bow the knee to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so we go on preaching the gospel, seeing sinners saved. And that's the way, like, you're talking about the world being turned upside down. The world being turned upside down was through the proclamation of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And the social reforms followed. It means that, you know, certainly we follow Christ in the sense that he cared for physical needs. We execute mm-hmm. those things and we do that. Mm-hmm. But we care for physical needs with the intention of caring for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to believe the gospel. And as they believe the gospel, then they conduct their lives in submission to the King.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a temptation, like, in kind of all of our comments, and I think comments I've gotten from Sarah too about social media, just friends and acquaintances, like there's a temptation to just to, like, close ourselves off. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what you're saying about that kind of, like, ordinary obedience of mm-hmm. the daily life is, like, as believers, that we're not closed off to our neighbors. And mm-hmm. I think we do have an excellent opportunity mm-hmm. to serve our neighbors and to live the truth mm-hmm. out mm-hmm. for people around us. When I say neighbors, I mean, I'm including, like, people we're friends with online and those kinds of things, like, to see that truth displayed. Like,
yeah,
I think we
don't
still
shrink
have a,
back. You
we
know?
Have a responsibility. Yeah. But, like, also to, obviously we care for those in our body in a distinct way. You should mm-hmm. listen to the sermon from a Sunday in the recent past if you want to listen about that. But we also care for our neighbors, right? And, like, mm-hmm. that, thinking about the people around us, how we can be neighborly to them. I think there's a way that we can be neighborly in this by showing the truth, but also just by being generous, hospitable people mm-hmm. and showing kindness, which is it 1 Peter or 2 Peter? Like, to show, basically, I might be completely off. So that on the day
of religion?
No, I mean, obviously that's pure religion, but I'm saying that's James, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, on the day of, like, they'll see our good works.
Oh, see your good works.
That's Matthew 5, but there's another one that I'm thinking of.
Always be ready to give an answer for that, but you have a gentleness
of respect.
Yeah,
what's right before that? On the day of visitation, they might
glorify God.
Yeah.
And see your good works or something like that.
Yeah. So
you
that's
have your
what
Bible
I'm
right there, bro.
I know, but I don't know where it's at.
We have a producer.
Come on, Charles.
He can just splice and dice. Patch it over.
If it's that one, it's...
Do you want that to be the conclusion verse?
Well, I have one too.
Oh, you want to read two? We'll pick. We'll see which one's better. I'm building out time for you, Blake.
Mine's Psalm 139.
Google it. Put some Googles in it. Yours is which one?
Psalm 139.
The whole thing?
No, I was just going to read it.
You're going to read the whole thing?
I just did.
It's 1 Peter 2:12.
Read it.
All right.
And then we'll read
Exodus 11 and 12. Beloved, I urge you.
Okay, let's do this. So in conclusion, the guys have a Bible verse.
Yeah, it's my brothers and my friends have a Bible verse. 1 Peter 2:11 and 12 says,
Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation.
Yeesh. You read yours.
Psalm 139:13. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your books were written every one of them. The days were formed for me when as yet there was none of them. Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to thank my fellow elders, Lawson Harlow and Blake McCullough, for the time spent today. Fellas, you minister to my soul. Big facts. My big brothers facts. And my friends. Godspeed.
Godspeed.
Best burger I've ever had is at Charles Conner's house.
It's true.
You know what made his burger the best?
The toppings.
That cheese.
How'd you know that?
Because we've had this conversation.
Oh, that's right.
Because they think through it.
They do. I was talking.
They're hospitable with their toppings.
You come to your house and you're like,
if you go to my house,
here's
you
your meat and bun, and you better come with your own Chick-fil-A mayo pack.
That's how I did those dudes on Friday.
Charles came to the house, and I text him on the way. And what I say, if you want lettuce, you better bring it.
So weird, dude. I come to your house, Charles. It's like you got diced up avocado.
But you know what they don't have? You know what they don't have? Pepper jack cheese.
They don't have pepper jack cheese. So stupid.
The whole conversation.
I just assumed, like, I saw like, it's like 16 I've got, packs of cheese.
So
you
I've
know?
Got cheddar. I've got Colby. I got Swiss. I got American. I got
Gouda.
Gouda.
Smoked Gouda.
Smoked Gouda. Yeah, those are all great options. Do you happen to have pepper jack?
No, I didn't even say that. I said, I'll have pepper jack. It was an imperative command.
And that's like, I'm going to Kroger.
He was so sheepish, too. He's like, well, actually, we don't have pepper jack. And then like, once I said it, everybody was like, cheese. God, that does sound good.
The only two cheeses for burgers for me are American and pepper jack. I reject cheddar altogether.
I go fake American all day long. I think it's the best cheese
singles
on a burger.
Yeah. Absolute, no question. I double.
And you fold them. We've talked about this before, right?
What?
You fold them so they don't leak off.
You fold them into the mini square.
No, I've never done this.
All right, you take the square, right?
Put all the corners in the middle.
I've seen you do this.
And it makes the mini square.
It's like a fortune.
So that it
double
so that
piece of cheese that it just melts double square. I had
so
a piece of paper
always,
I show you.
I always put two pieces.
You're losing. Yeah, yes.
I put two pieces of cheese on it where the corners, like...
Yeah, like you're making one big circle.
Like a star.
Yeah.
It's artistic.
You don't need that. You're dripping out.
Yeah, it's all going down the grill.
Not all, but some
a lot
for sure.
Of it.
But you don't have a sufficient amount of cheese on a burger unless when you bite it, the burger slides on the bun.
Oh, that's what mayonnaise is for.
No, mayonnaise is gross. The amount of, no, I like mayonnaise, but the amount of mayonnaise you use is gross.
You don't know me.
Do you use charcoal?
For my grill?
Yeah. You charcoal guy? You grass?
Have we talked about how I think I'm allergic to charcoal?
What?
This isn't real.
No.
Every time I grill with normal charcoal, I get sick. But I've started using lump charcoal. It's fine. Huh. So, yes, I'm a charcoal guy.
What do you think? Like, what kind of charcoal are you using? Is it Kingsford? That's the one that's doing it? Have you seen Kingsford's come out?
I was using Kroger.
Like, flavored charcoals? That's
makes me
so weird, bro.
Hey,
garlic and thyme.
Like, what? I'm not going to sit here and sniff it.
What am I licking the smoke?
Sniff it? I don't understand that. I really don't.
You don't understand.
It's
what?
A marketing ploy. It's yeah, all it's it like, is. It's the smoker culture. Like everybody wants to be a smoker now.
I get that, but
like they want to be able to smoke some meats.
The only thing that I want to do with my life in regard to smoking meats is ribs. I don't care to learn anything else.
I just want a friend who smokes meats all the time.
Drew Thomas?
And I just like will give him the meats and he'll just smoke them and give them back to me.
Don't.